we now have people that believe in what we do, right? It has shifted their consciousness. And the way we shift their consciousness is by getting that information into the neocortex so they can believe it. And again, our information is truth and it makes sense. So it's rare that they don't buy it and believe it. Boom, and they drop it into the limbic system. Now we're happening. Now it's working. Now here's the problem. Most all information in most conversations does not.
Welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast, where we help natural health practitioners and wellness experts build profitable, predictable, and enjoyable practices. Each week, we share simple, effective, easily actionable, and proven heart-centered marketing strategies. And now your hosts, Dr. Angus Pike and Dr. Tony Rose.
Welcome to episode 25 of the Marketing Your Practice podcast. Today, Tony and I sat down with our good friend, Dr. Russ Rose. Now, Russ, for those of you that don't know him, Russ has spent the last 20 years coaching docs on what it takes to run a thriving practice and, just as importantly, to have a thriving life. Tony and I were interested in talking with Russ about some of his biggest learnings over the last 20 years and what does he see as the key characteristics that kind of lead to that outcome as well. So we spoke about two pillars. The first we spoke about was the importance of certainty. Now, with us as mostly kind of natural health practitioners, it's not just good enough for you to be good at what you do. We have to have this confidence and certainty in the way that we communicate. I like that idea of Russ talking about the difference between a white belt punching the bricks and the difference between a black belt punching the bricks. You know, one being a broken hand and the other being broken bricks as well. So he's got a great strategy that will help you end up with more confidence and certainty, which will really change the way that you communicate, not just one-on-one, but the way you're able to communicate out in one-to-many, whether it be kind of through Facebook, through videos, those kind of things as well. And then
the second one was all about the what Russ terms the neuroscience of communication. And this is making sure that our message is actually getting into our listeners' brains in the right way and not being trapped by the reptilian part of the brain and not being sent to the neocortex. And you'll get it as you go through this wonderful interview. And Russ really lays out what you need to be doing to make sure that we are getting messages up into the neocortex, into the limbic system, so that people can adopt that as, I guess, take it on as their own and see sense in what you're saying and not reject or block what you're saying. So super interview. Russ is on fire in this one. So sit back and relax and enjoy.
Great framework. Certainty, neuroscience of communication. Let's dive on in. Well, I got to tell you, gang, I'm excited today because I have 45 minutes with one of my dearest friends in the world. Welcome to the Marketing Your Practice podcast, Dr. Russ Rosen. G'day, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, baby. So glad to be here with both of you. The whole crew, let's rock and roll, baby. We got stuff to cover.
Exactly. G'day, Russ. Great to see you, mate.
Yeah, mate.
We better give our audience a bit of a heads up. Russ speaks Hawaiian, yeah. So if you're confused at any time, we might have to put some kind of closed captions underneath that as well.
Subtitles.
Yeah, that's right. So in case something comes up like broke my mouth, that's one that we talk about all the time. So
it's broke my mouth with mouth. A P-H at the end, mouth.
Got it. So that's a conversation for another time. Now, for those of you that haven't met Russ, I'm going to give you just a quick kind of touch. Russ is one of the most gifted communicators that I've ever had the pleasure of coming across, and we've been friends for a number of years now. Russ has spent almost the last 20 years coaching mostly chiropractors, but health practitioners, how to build a thriving life and how to build a thriving practice. One of the many things I love about Russ is that he's just as keen as helping his clients have, as I said before, a thriving life, not just a thriving practice. And we were discussing that, you know, from 20 years of coaching, you know, in person and in group, thousands of different practitioners, what are the one or two traits that he sees that leads towards a really thriving life? And we went, let's get Russ on. Mm. Let's have the conversations. There's two things that you're really going to talk about today, this concept of certainty in practice, and then this idea of yours, which I just love, of the neuroscience of communication and how all that kind of fits in. So without any further ado, Let's talk about this concept of certainty in practice. Where does it fit into a thriving life in practice? And then let's leap into the neuroscience of communication. So welcome.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing about certainty. It's one of those like scotomas, right? Nobody thinks they have problems with it and everybody does. You know, I was just having a conversation with a friend of yours and mine, Pat Gentempo, about, maybe 2 months ago. And we were diving into the concept of the subluxation. And I would suggest that Pat and I have put a fair amount of time into that concept of what is a subluxation. You know, 30 some odd years of practice for me and him and all we've done. And we were both saying, you know, this last year, I'm starting to really get a whole new level of understanding. Right. So I would just suggest that when we start off with certainty and people, you know, you can hear that sound, which is their eyes rolling back in their head, that they don't need that. I would suggest that most of us do. And here's why. Because what certainty is the difference between a white belt hitting a brick and a black belt hitting a brick. They look almost exactly alike until the hand hits the brick. White belt breaks their hand. Black belt breaks the brick. It's the why behind the how. It's who I am. It's all of my power and what I say. You've seen some of these older chiropractors. They don't talk much, but they have so much certainty and so much power that the patient goes, I'm in the presence of a master. I'm going to do what she says, right? So that's what certainty is. It's knowing who I am and what I do so that every cell in my being, you know, every fiber vibrates that, and it's a whole different experience on the other end. Make sense so far on that?
I see. When I see certainty, to me, it kind of also comes under this umbrella of leadership. So when we talk about practice magnifier number one, which is be great at what you do, we see practitioners, chiropractors, naturopaths that have awesome technical skills, but often the message that we're communicating is contrary to what the community wants to hear. If there's not certainty, if there's not leadership behind your message that you put forward, you're going to get beaten down. And I think that metaphor of, you know, you're going to punch that brick, it's going to break your hand versus you being able to break through to your community and lead them into a better place. So where does certainty come from? Like, how do I build up this confidence, this belief, this certainty in what I have to offer to the community?
Yeah, so look, without a doubt, and there's so much to that. And what I want to do is I just want to ask these questions because these are the ones I ask my doctors that I personally coach. I have a module on this section. They go through it, they listen to it, and we nut it out, as the Aussies would say. We have a discussion and help them find their truth about this. There isn't the truth. There is a your truth at this moment, which is always growing and evolving, as Pat and I had just discussed. Like, we've been growing and evolving over all these years. So here are some questions. And I would say whether you're a dentist or a chiropractor, a naturopath, medical doctor, an osteopath, a massage therapist, a psychologist, it doesn't matter. I'm going to use the word subluxation, but we could use the word cavity. We could use the word congestion of chi, right? It really is all the same thing. So here are some questions that I would ask you to make a note about. And you guys can talk about any of these if you want. But here's how I help docs find their truth. The first one is, what is a subluxation? Okay, what is a cavity? Right? Why do we subluxate? Why do we get cavities? Right? How do you measure a subluxation and can you measure it? Now, it's kind of a trick question, okay? What is an adjustment? How do we know if our adjustment is working short-term and long-term? How much time should we spend per adjustment? Well, very dependent on what am I trying to accomplish during my adjustment? What am I trying to accomplish with my patient? Am I trying to get them out of pain? So on our scale, we use negative 10 to 0 to positive 10, right? So negative 10 is near death. 0 is I'm comfortable. I feel good. My tests aren't clear. I'm not healthy. And then plus 10 is I'm as healthy as I can possibly be. So is my intent to get them here? Is that what I'm trying to accomplish? Is my intent to get them here? And if I'm going to get them here, I got to do a whole lot more than just adjust. You know, I get, right? You got to show me not to recreate it, right? I mean, you know, can you imagine a dentist, drill, fill, and bill and not saying brush and floss? It just doesn't make any sense. So what am I trying to accomplish? Do I understand the difference between the hoodoo and the voodoo? The voodoo is what you're doing. The hoodoo is the power behind the punch. The hoodoo is the understanding of what it is that I'm doing. And does it make a difference when you're giving your adjustment, what you're thinking and what you're knowing? And the answer is 100% yes. Absolutely. And if you've studied quantum physics at all, you know that that's true. The last piece, the last question I like to throw out is, how do I find and fix my contradictions, especially my subconscious one? We all have blind spotted subconscious contradictions. And how do I find those and how do I fix those? So once I'm really clear about who am I, what do I do, what am I trying to accomplish with my patient, how do I know it actually got done? Do I really know what a subluxation is? The vast majority of chiropractors that I speak to, from my perspective, have a very limited understanding. They're looking at the elephant and they're going, that's a tail. But they have a very limited understanding of it. And I would suggest, by the people that I've worked with who are acupuncturists and naturopaths, it's the same thing. They have very limited understanding. They really look at the what to do versus why, and you know, why and who am I that's doing it. So once I get this, then I have to look at, how do I communicate it to other human beings? How do I help them value and want what it is that I have to offer them? Mm-hmm. Which we can go into, or I can go into any of those you'd like to go into.
Yeah, Russ, great questions. And I think that's such great questions that can lead to, I think, for a lot of people. I'm just thinking about, you know, we've been in practice over 20 years and, you know, there's some certainty around some of those, but there's still a little bit of unanswered stuff there, I think, even for myself. But it makes me think of the younger practitioners coming out that probably have never even thought about those questions beyond what they're just taught at university. And to have this questioning the whole time, is what I'm doing making a difference? And can I make a difference beyond symptom relief or wherever it is for that person? I think that's huge, guys. Go back and look at those questions that Russ has just given to you and get some good answers, but some answers for you, not because Tony said something or because Russ said something or Angus did. You got to find these answers for you that give you the certainty in what you're doing and who you are being. I think it's massive.
Because one of the challenges, you know, use that kind of example of a cavity. You know, it's pretty easy to see if a cavity's there, and it's also pretty easy to see if it's gone. If you're dealing with some of the more subtle energetic side of things, like many of our listeners are, or, you know, assessment of the spine and nervous system, it's going to require some other tools for us to look at, you know, the scanning technologies, postural assessments, those kind of things there as well. That if you don't stop and really clarify the paradigm that you're working in, we end up going down this path, which I think is a dangerous path of fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, so you mentioned touch base on this concept of contradictions. How would we find and identify contradictions? What are some of the big contradictions that you see that practitioners, chiropractors have? How do you get over them?
Yeah, here's the deal. It's one thing I did not want to talk about today. It's so funny because of the depth of that one, and I don't want to skim over it. Maybe we could do more detail on that at another time. But I will hit a very important one, and it's this. But there's a lot of them. There's so many of them that I just see. Once we fix these, across the board, people send me an email and go, oh, my God, my practice just popped because they clear up these contradictions. With that said, here's one of the big ones. Most of the people coming to me nowadays, more so than 20 years ago, are, I would say 75% are not wanting to use the word subluxation. And what I start with them is I just say, I get that, I'm okay with that, we don't have to use it. But can I just ask you a question? What is a subluxation? And then I get this full deer in headlights and I go, well, no wonder you don't want to use it, because you really don't even know what it is. And the truth of the matter is if we don't really know what it is, how do we know if the work that we're doing is actually working or not? And as you talked about, like a cavity, the problem is this, and we can go into any amount of detail you want, again, I have a module on this, but as long as you think that a subluxation is a thing, you're looking at the tail of an elephant. From my perspective, subluxation is a state of being. If you remember the safety pin cycle, which unfortunately these people coming out of school haven't heard of before, but it's a state of disapprehension and dis-efferentation. That's what it is. It's a state of being. So if I step on a nail, will that affect S1? Yeah. Will it affect my skin? Yeah. Will S1 affect bowel, bladder, and sexual organs? Good. Could that affect my ankle? Yeah. My knee? Ow. My cranial nerves? Yeah. Can it affect the brainstem? My breathing? Like, it can affect everything. One of my great mentors, Ted Mortar, bless his heart, has passed away of best fame. He used to say this all the time: anything can cause anything, and anything can fix anything. And I would always scratch my head trying to figure out the neurology of that, but I understand it now. I understand that if it's a state of disapprehension and dis-efferentation, loop one. Disapprehension, dis-efferentation, loop two. You can see that there's these string of Christmas lights that are not turned on because one of them is turned off because I stepped on a nail. And the problem is, as long as the main indicator that I'm using is pain, we're in deep trouble, because you can, you know, go out and meet a hot new guy or a hot new gal and fall in love and you feel great and you're dying of cancer. Right? Pain is not the best indicator. Is it an indicator? Well, yeah. I mean, the sensory nervous system is part of the nervous system. But most of the docs that come on working with me, that's their main indicator. And I go, well, how do you know if what you did worked or not, if we're not going to, if it's, you know, not just pain? And again, it's deer in headlight. So it's really easy to go cavity, okay? Drill cavity, fill cavity, bill. That's easy because it's a thing. It's not a state of being. When it's a state of being, I have to look at completely different ways of monitoring. And the question, last thought on this, because it's just so important: can you measure a subluxation? And the answer is no, you can't. You can measure the effect of a subluxation. Can you measure wind? No. You can measure a wind sock. That's the effect of wind. Can you measure electricity? No. You can measure the effect of electricity. Can you measure a subluxation? So let me ask you this. Would, say, blood pressure, could that be a way of measuring the effect of a subluxation?
Yeah. It could be. I told.
Skin temperature? Yeah. Skin temperature?
Yes.
Yep. Range of motion? Yep. Posture?
Yeah.
Blood work? You know, what's called acupuncture meridians. Any physiologic effect in your body can be a part of disapprehension and dis-efferentation. And when we get this, our whole world changes, because all of a sudden we're looking through a different lens. And then you take a look at some of these other more esoteric techniques, the AK kind of techniques, you know, quantum neurology, QNRT, all these different ones. All of a sudden, whoa, now it makes sense. How does muscle testing work? How can I just go right there and find? Now all of a sudden it makes sense, because it's sitting inside of this quantum experience. It's a whole different world when we get this level of clarity. And then we bring that back into our practice and explain it in ways that our patients get it, value it, and want it. And that's, you know, really what the next part is about, is how do you do that?
Let's get into that, because I was sitting here and I just got this cheeky grin, probably on the inside, but I don't know about the outside. But the way you can communicate these concepts to me, and hopefully our listeners are getting this as well, is second to none, Russ. I love it. There's going to be people out there that go, I just want to be able to communicate it like Russ does. You know, it just makes sense. How do we go about that? How do we get this concept that's pretty big and then distill it down into something that is communicatable to our practice members one-on-one?
And not only that, too, just to jump in there as well, it's not just, you know, as we spoke with Karen Smith in a previous episode, because this same communication framework needs to be through our videos, through our print, if we're talking to a group of people, through this Russ's concept of the neuroscience of communication goes across platforms, which is ace there too. I just want our audience to listen. It's not just one-on-one, so.
Yeah, not at all. Yeah, all right, so here's the deal. Here's the first thing is Tony, thank you so much for saying that. The people who have a really tough time understanding the depth of what a subluxation is chiropractors. Patients completely get it. They have no problem getting it. When you do the things that I recommend and you just connect the dots for them, they just sit there and they go, God dang, why didn't anyone tell me this before? It makes so much sense. So it really is simple stuff. And remember, where we have to start is nobody wants a drill. And guess what they want?
They want a hold.
They want a hold. That's what they want. They don't want a drill. So that's not where I'm starting with people. Like, you know, you go out and give a talk to a bunch of pregnant mums and bubs, right? You're not going to talk about subluxation. You're not going to talk about chiropractic. No one cares about chiropractic. Even chiropractors don't care about chiropractic, right? They care about what's important to them. So I'm always going to speak through the lens of what is important to them. But just think about this for a moment. If I'm speaking to pregnant women, what are three things they might be interested in?
Well, a happy and healthy birth. Maybe drug-free might be their one to go to.
Yeah.
Maybe
decreased labor time.
Decreased labor time. Maybe they want less aches and pains, more energy, less morning sickness.
Yeah, I want a great pregnancy. I want a great delivery. And I want to come back fast. Like, those are three things. So if I get in front of a group of them and I go, hey, I want to talk to you about these three things, are they now interested? You bet your butt they are. How do we accomplish this? Get your nervous system working at its optimum. Learn ways not to recreate it by living a reasonable lifestyle. Let's look at elite athletes. What are three things elite athletes might like?
Yeah, performance.
Injury prevention and then injury recovery.
That's it. Those are the three things. You know, prevent injuries, recover faster, and peak performance. Those are the three things. How do you accomplish it? Get the nervous system functioning at its optimum and show ways not to recreate it by living a reasonable lifestyle. Now, you might have specific things for those people and specific things for those, but that's the basic. But see, that's the drill. They didn't, you know, all you as you had talked about, you know, you smuggle in the donkey. You need to talk to them about what's important to them and help them evaluate. Here's the problem. In the neuroscience of communications, here's what we know. So what does the reptilian brain do for a living?
It's kind of defense running very keeps basic sort of functions. Yeah, keeps us alive.
Yeah, that's it, baby. Survival, food, fornication, and fighting. That's what it does for a living. And it's allowing in like one out of every, you know, 200,000 impulses up to the neocortex. Now, what does the neocortex do for a living?
Reasons.
Quality of life, thinking, problem solving, love, creativity. Yeah.
Thinking and reasoning, baby, that's it. It's problem solving. Give it to the neocortex to figure something out, right? If it believes it, it sends it into the limbic system as a belief system of, oh, I believe that. Or it goes, nonsense. That's crap. But our goal is it's eight ball corner pocket off the side. We're trying to get through the reptilian brain into the neocortex, drop it into the neocortex long enough for them to go like this. That makes sense. And boom, it goes right into the limbic system. And you now have a pikeite. Right? A roseite, a rosinite. We now have people that believe in what we do, right? It has shifted their consciousness. And the way we shift their consciousness is by getting that information into the neocortex so they can believe it. And again, our information is truth and it makes sense. So it's rare that they don't buy it and believe it. Boing, and they drop it into the limbic system. Now we're happening. Now it's working. Now here's the problem. Most all information in most conversations does not make it past the reptilian brain. How come?
I guess we've got filters up, but we're looking for stuff that might contradict our beliefs.
Is it talking to rather than extracting from?
It's food, fornication, and fighting. And unless you're doing food, fornicating, and fighting with your patients, that reptilian brain is asleep. It's not interested in sending anything to your neocortex. Now, I'm being very clear here. I'm not recommending doing those three things with your patient. To be clear, I'm not recommending that at all. What I am saying is this. If I want information to go up past the reptilian brain into the neocortex, I have to make that information exciting. I have to make that information new and novel. I have to make that information important to you. And what's the most important thing that I could possibly talk about in relationship to you?
Me.
No, not me.
You.
Me.
It's total your story. That's right. It's you. It's your story. That's the most important thing. If you're talking with them about their story and you're starting to show them ways that you can possibly help with what they're concerned about, their reptilian brain is literally sitting there with its tongue hanging out, drooling, and it's listening. It's sitting there going, man, I'm in, I'm listening. That's all I need to do is get the reptilian brain engaged. If I get it engaged, it is sending it to the neocortex. By definition, that's what happens, right? So if I say to you, all right, so let me ask you a question. What do you think brought that on? You will watch people and they'll go like this. Well, neocortex. This is neocortex. This is reptilian brain. Right? We're talking to patients all the time and they're drooling, you know? We're asking them yes and no questions. You know, did this ever happen? Yes. Do you understand that? Yes. Do you want to do this? Yes. And they're just drooling. The reality is in any conversation, depending upon how fast you speak, I happen to speak kind of fast, so it may not be exactly true for me, but the amount of information going by, our brain is processing information 7 times faster than we're having this conversation. So seventh of the time, it's looking around, it's thinking of what it needs to do. It's multitasking. That's what's happening. Unless I can get your attention. If I get its attention, it's sending all of my information to the neocortex. And that is the name of the game. Get all of my information to the neocortex. So far, so good?
Yes.
If we get the information to the neocortex, what happens?
Well, then we've got that opportunity for learning for that to make its way to the limbic system to say either yay or nay from there.
That's right. Now, I now know that Angus knows that. How do I know? Because I asked him, he thought, and he told me back. Cunning, not sure.
Got me. Got me with the process.
Exactly. Yeah. But see,
the matrix.
If I would have said to you, if I would have said, so, reptilian brain information goes to the neocortex, goes over to the limbic system, does that make sense? And you said yes, you very well could have been distracted for a moment, came back, didn't want to be embarrassed, and said yes. Mm. That's how it works. And our patients do it all the time. And if you don't believe me, have your patient go out, have your CA say, what did you get from the doctor? And be ready to be kicked in the crotch. Hmm. Right? Because it's rarely what we hoped it was. So far, so good? Are we together?
Yes, we're loving it.
So here's the question. How do we engage the reptilian brain? Step one, we quit doing what we were taught in school and at all the seminars we've ever been to, which is, and this is my Billy D impression, I love Billy D. You gotta tell the story. You gotta tell the story. You gotta get out and tell the story. And I appreciate the sentiment behind that. Billy D, I love you, brother. But you gotta ask the story. You gotta ask the story. Telling doesn't work. And for those of you listening right now who have children, telling doesn't work. Especially if they're older, 18, 19, 20, and you start finding out what actually happened when you thought they were listening to you, telling doesn't work. So there's a lot of different ways, but I want to cut to the chase. The way to get the information past the reptilian brain is for me to speak from my neocortex to your reptilian brain. And the way I do that, see, I'm not going to educate you. I'm not going to educate you and educate you and educate you. I'm going to speak to your reptilian brain, eight ball corner pocket. You're going to send it to the?
Right. Cortex.
Neocortex.
Yeah. Neocortex. And that's going to drop into the?
Limbic system.
And now I know they got it and they believe it. Okay?
Got it. So, Russell, can you clarify this for me? Because I keep on going here, that when you talk about engaging the reptilian brain or speaking to the reptilian brain, my brain immediately goes, because when I think about doing that, I think about that's going to fire me up. I'm either going to want to feed, fornicate, or fight. So is that, that's what I'm hearing there too.
Thank you. It's feed, fornicate, or fight, or talk to them about something new, novel, and exciting, something that's important to them. Talk to them about their story.
Yeah.
Right? If somebody comes in, go ahead.
So do I want to engage the reptilian brain or do I want to turn it off?
No, you want to wake it so that it can wake stuff through to the neocortex.
Got it.
You want to engage it. When it's asleep, it's holding everything down. When it wakes up, it sends it up to the neocortex.
Got it. Okay. So that's the metaphor.
That's what it does for living. It's a filter. That's what it does for, it just filters.
Right.
And then you go, man, I got this terrible back pain. Man, I'm sorry to hear that. Is it right there? It goes and sends it to the neocortex. If you go, hey, I want to let you know that in this office, we don't treat pain. See, there was a guy named Didi Palmer and he had a dog named Fluffy and his wife, Ruth, and it goes, and it just shuts down. It's not new. It's not new, novel. It's not exciting. It's not about me. God knows you're not talking to me about me. I'm not interested. And therefore, none of that information gets in. Angus, I know this is true for you. Have you ever sat in class and you heard your teacher say this? Wah, 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 wah. And that'll be on the test. And all you hear is, right? Like everybody wakes up. The reptilian brain heard that'll be on the test. Everything else was, God, will this ever end? Can I get out and serve? Right? That's what's happening. The reptilian brain is, and I'm out there thinking about being in the water. And then, wow, that'll be on the test. Oh, that's important.
Got it.
Got it?
Yeah. So this is the that'll be on the test. That's our kind of watermark of the way that we're wanting to communicate to our audience. And I think about this, Russ, too. I'm running this through of, you know, if someone's, you know, thumbing through Facebook or Instagram, you know, they're thrumbing through there and we want our post to come up with a, that'll be on the test. Stop. Ah, that's for me. Because if not, everything else is kind of getting its way through and we need to talk to them in a way in that that'll be on the test kind of way that stops them in their path. And has them go, this is for me, whether that's via a one-to-many platform or whether this is a one-to-one when I'm communicating with someone in my consultation room. So
here's a great example of that. Are you an athlete? Would you like to know more about how chiropractic can help you? Are you an athlete? Would you like more personal best to prevent injuries and recover faster?
Yeah.
Those are the differences. Right? One is speaking something I'm very interested in. And the puppy, the reptilian brain, its tongue is hanging out and it's salivating and it's going, right on, baby. I'm listening. I'm excited. The other one is chiropractic. I don't care.
Yeah.
So here's the long, the short of how we get there. Okay. It's through Socratic questions. Here's an informational question. Tony, what's your last name?
Rose. I had to think about it.
I actually saw it. I think the
dog woke up. I wanted to fornicate, Russ. Every time you ask me, I want to fornicate.
That's a perfect example of sitting in the class on the test. Oh,
exactly.
My first thought was
you put this down a bit. Wait, give me a second. Let me put this down. All right, is that still screwing me up? Give me a second here. All right, so here's the deal. You know, like if you're falling asleep and I ask you a question like that, that is causing that. If you're not falling asleep, I go, what's your last name? And you go, Rose. Did you learn anything? Or did you already know your last name?
No, I knew my last name, yep.
You already knew it. Not a Socratic question. A Socratic question is one from Socrates that makes you go like this. That's a Socratic question. It makes you think. You go, huh? Like that. So what do you think brought that on? Like, why do you think this is happening? What do you think caused that? That's a Socratic question that's making you think. Do you think this is going to get better on its own? Do you think if we start to get proper nerve supply, you get a better chance of healing? All of those, they literally have to go like this. they have to look up and they got to think, scratch their goatee and go, yeah, yep. And now it went into the neocortex. So when I look at the consultation, the examination, the report of findings, regular daily education, re-exams, re-reports, my healthcare talk, everything that I'm looking at through the Socratic lens of how can I ask you questions to make you think? How can I keep your reptilian brain engaged so that it's sending information to the neocortex? Now, if I can do that part, which literally in our work, we have a series of questions you ask people and you know what you're trying to accomplish. And they're all Socratic questions that cause this to happen. But if you do that, most people, as Socrates says, will make reasonable and logical decisions. Most people, if you walk them from here to here, they will get to the point that they go, yeah, I do see the value of a healthy functioning nervous system and reasonable lifestyle more than just getting out of pain. I do see how this could be preventing problems in the future. I do see how I can reverse the effects of the aging process and be healthier in 5 years than I am right now. I do see how I could have a better life. Now we've got that greater picture. But again, if we don't go back to what is the subluxation, state of disafferentation, disafferentation, if you don't really get this, I mean, if you don't really get how this thing works, then when you come in and connect the dots for these patients, it's a very limited picture that you're giving them. And therefore, your retention most likely reflects that. Whereas when someone understands this greater disafferentation, disafferentation, and the value to them, when they truly get that, the vast majority of them will see the value of staying for a lifetime and referring in their family and friends. How could they not? If they truly understood what we quote unquote understand, but my experience is most of us really don't understand it, which is the beginning of the problem. So here we go. Step one, figure out who you are and what you do, what you really do, what is subluxation, blah, blah, blah. Then figure out how to help other human beings understand what you understand. So many chiropractors start with me in the next step, which is, can we just start marketing? And I go, we could. We can drop a bunch of water into your extremely sieve leaking bucket, if you like. But what I'd rather do is get clear about who you are and what you do, so we can then communicate that with other human beings. Now, when you do drive people in, because you're doing Tony and Angus programs, and you do drive people in, they stay, pay, and refer for a lifetime. That's the difference.
Yeah, makes sense. As opposed to us just wanting to tell people, as you said beforehand, you know,
ask the story.
Yeah, let's get a dialogue. Let's see if we can get up where there is. I totally get it there too. So what kind of questions can you help us out more? Okay, look, I get this idea, Russ. I need to start asking more questions, you know, to my practice members and stuff like that too. You talked about some during the initial consultation. What about on our ongoing visits? You know, what are questions that we can start to ask our practice members that will help expand their understanding of their health, the value of your care, those kind of things?
Yeah, here we go. Step one is the first thing that they have to understand. They've got to understand this, is I have subluxations that could be causing my chief complaint as well as a whole bunch of other problems. I understand probably what brought it on in the first place. I get what's going to happen if I don't get him taken care of. If I do, I can not only feel better, prevent problems in the future, reverse the effects of the aging process, or be healthier in 5 years than I am now, and I have a better life. I understand when I'm subluxated, it's really more of a health problem than just a back problem. I want to get healthy and stay healthy, and you can help me do it. That's the first thing that needs to happen. Now, at the end, I'll give a link that you can go to, and you can, I'll send you videos on exactly how to get your patient to say that out loud. By the end of the examination, if they don't say that out loud, by the end of the examination, you have no business giving a report of findings, as far as I'm concerned. I understand I have subluxations. I get what they're probably causing. I know what brought them on. If I don't get them taken care of, if I do get them taken care of, I got a health problem, not a back problem. I want to get healthy and stay healthy. You'll notice they're now talking about health because they understand their pain is just a manifestation of the disaffirmation, disaffirmation. And that happens during the exam. I'll answer that in a second. No. Because then in the report of findings, I've got to find out what they truly want. Do you just want to get feeling better? You haven't fully resolved everything, but that's all right for you. And this isn't, you know, band-aid, patch it up care that only a moron would choose. This is understanding all the things that are going on in your life. Is this what you want, or do you want to get as healthy as you could possibly get? And here's how we would know that, right? We would know it because blah, 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 symptomatically in all your tests and blah, blah, blah. Do you want something in between? So let's just assume for this conversation, to answer your question, they said, I really want to get healthy, which you're going to find more than 8 out of 10. So right around 9 out of 10 people will choose that, right? And it's not like they're just choosing it because they think that's the right answer. We use the Socratic question where we actually push them away and we go, yeah, I get that, you know, that seems like the right answer, but do you really want that? And do you want to do all the stuff it'll take to get there? Like, this is, you know, quite a commitment of time, energy, and finances. This is a big deal. Do you really want this? So like, we're really clear about it. Okay. So now in our regular visit, you with me so far? Are we together?
Perfect.
All right. So those had to have happened because what happens in our regular visits is simply an extension of that conversation, right? And what I could do is I could go, all right, here's what you do on your regular visits. On visit one, I want you to talk about chiropractic and anal fissures. And visit two, I want you to talk about chiropractic and, right? I mean, I could give you that story, but who cares? Is the reptilian brain interested in chiropractic and anal fissures?
Well, if you've got an anal fissure, yes.
That's it. If you have anal fissures, tongue is out listening. If you don't have anal fissures, you just put them to sleep, right? We do it all the time. We put people to sleep. They came in wanting what we had to offer. We did things and said things that pushed them away. This is how we do it. So if you got clear about what it truly is and how that expression in their life, right? So you look at, you know, in the consultation, you help them understand what's going on and how it's affecting them. You've connected that to the nervous system. They see this entire disapparentation, disefferentation, and how it's expressing itself uniquely within them, and they're blown away. They say, I get this, and I really want to get healthy. Now I want to just simply keep that conversation going. So got a basketball, got it spinning on my finger. That happened in visit one and visit two. Regular visits is this. Just keep the ball spinning, right? It's not a big deal. Getting it going is a big deal. Keeping it going doesn't take a lot of effort, but any idiot can get people to sign up for your care. It takes a wise person to get them to stick around long enough and then want to continue. And that comes down to my daily interactions, my reeval re-reports, and my series of talks. But it's all based on this same story, and that same story starts with them and their story, right? I'm making my story, chiropractic, about your story. So if your story is neck pain and headaches, that's my story. That's what I'm talking about. Now I expand that consciousness and I make it bigger, and now you go, well, that's important to me. So last thought on that. I was doing a talk in Colorado, and Bill Estes was at it. He was in the front row, and I said, look, if people thought that their headaches were caused by lint in their belly button, then the question is, would they want you to take care of the lint in their belly button? The answer is yes. They don't care. They don't want a drill. They want a hole. And I went up, and I lifted up Bill's shirt, and there was lint in his belly button. It was so cool. He just pulled it out and went like that for the crowd. It was very, very cool. All right. So daily interactions, how do I keep this story going? It's through Socratic questions. So here's my 4 steps in a daily interaction. Step one, I'm going to let you know that when you come in, we're going to check in. I'm going to start palpating. I know exactly what's going on. I know what we need to do. I'm going to ask if there's anything new or different. And if there is, you got to let me know. Otherwise, we're going to get right to business. Don't want to waste your time. I'm not going to go through a laundry list of all these things and asking you how they are today. I'm just going to get in and see if there's anything new or different and do my job. Again, depending upon your technique, et cetera. The second thing is I'm going to talk about last time. It's absolutely critical. If you ever read the book Change or Die, it's critical that they see change. So I want them to, and I also want them to know that I know who you are and what's going on with you, because many chiropractors don't. Roll your left, roll your right, don't know your name. but hey, Tony, it's really good to see anything new or different. No. Hey, listen, last time, this mid-back area was really starting to free up, and we were expecting the indigestion to start to change. Have you noticed any change? Right? You know that I know exactly where you were last time. So last time I noticed this, this time I'm noticing this. So listen, this time your mid-back is looking way worse. It's really, really locked up. What question can I now ask them? Socratic question.
Why do you think that is? What's been going on?
Thank you. Why do you think that is? That's right. That's the question. Hey, Tony, listen, last time your mid-back was doing great. Your digestion was doing great. This time it's really locked up. Huh. Can you feel that? Yes. How's your digestion been? It's been terrible. Why do you think that is? Right? And then there's a whole process. They either get it or not. And if not, you ask them three questions. And what they're going to get to, because I went and drank a 12-pack of beer and I had fried ice cream. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Does that make sense that that could cause this to resubluxate, to aggravate this area, and that you're not getting proper nutrient supply and that you're not digesting well? Does that make sense to you? Yeah, it does. Great. So I'm not going to be saying you need to quit eating fried ice cream and 12 packs a day. I'm simply going to keep connecting the dots for you so that you say to me, do you think that if I were to stop doing that, maybe this could resolve? Right? I'm going to keep asking the right questions till it pops into their head and they say, because if I tell you what you should do when you're not ready for it, you will swat it away and you won't be ready to hear that again for a long time. Mm. Does it make sense?
I had a patient that I was adjusting yesterday. One of Kirby, who works with me, is away. And a woman who comes in there, who just came in a real health crisis. Breakdown, she's on the table and sore from top to bottom, visibly overweight, really obviously. And she's lying on the table there too. And, she was updating me on what was new and different there as well. And then I asked her, Sam, what do you think this is? Of which she came back to me and just went, I don't know. And I got this kind of stonewalled situation, which I kind of couldn't get past. And then it got into, oh, my body's had enough. And then I went, well, why do you think that is? And so when you're struck with challenges like that, my option on that, I go, I'm done for this visit there too. Let's help to ease a bit of her body, get it feeling better, and continue on that conversation. Where could we go with a situation like that when someone isn't able to answer the question in the way that I feel like they should answer it?
It's the questions that we're asking. There's two possibilities here. One is, I'm not asking the right questions, and I'll show you what I mean by that. The other one is, as my great friend Angus would say, not, I'm not interested, not today. Too much going on, don't want to talk about it. In which case, is the reptilian brain going to send the information to the neocortex? No. The reptilian brain is going to say this.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I did yesterday. So I went, right. I'll play the long game.
That's right. So now's not the time to have that conversation. But if I were to say, man, I'm so sorry that that's hurting so bad. Any idea what brought that on? Nah, not really. I don't know. Right. So just talk to me, because I don't want you to keep recreating the same thing over and over again. I hate seeing pain like this. The three things we know that can cause or aggravate subluxations, do you remember what they are? Now, if she does this to me, right, if she's doing that to me, then I let that go. But if she goes, yeah, right, so mental, emotional stress, biochemical stress, and physical, right, so have you done anything differently in the last day or two or since you saw me? Well, my dog got hit by a car, my husband left me, found out that I have, gonorrhea. I did drink a case of Chivas Regal, and I got hit by a truck. I'm living a country song. Yeah, okay. Well, that would make sense maybe why this is hurting then. I'm so sorry that you're going through this. Let me see what I can do to help. Or, no, I really don't know. Like, I really don't know what's going on. I understand mental, emotional. I understand biochemical. I understand. I really haven't done anything differently. So what are the possibilities now? By the way, let's say they're engaged. They're not flipping you out. They're engaged. What are the possibilities when they go, haven't done anything mentally, emotionally, haven't done anything biochemically, haven't done anything physically, I haven't done anything differently. What are now the possibilities of why this feels worse? Any idea?
I guess it could feel worse as the body's actually healing and repairing. So assuming that they haven't done anything, or maybe they're just not aware that what they've done. But let's assume they haven't done anything and they're still living a great lifestyle. You know.
Okay, wait. Let's pause. We'll get back to that because you said something I didn't.
Right.
You said, let's assume they haven't done anything differently and are living a what lifestyle?
A good lifestyle.
Yeah, great lifestyle. I didn't say that.
No.
No. So there's a possibility they haven't changed anything, but they need to. They're eating McDonald's every day, and before they could get away with that, but they're getting healthier now and they can't get away with that. That's a possibility, okay? But now let's just assume that they are living a really good lifestyle and they really didn't do anything differently. Why could they be in pain now?
Well, my experience certainly is that sometimes they, if for one of two reasons, they can be in pain and expressing symptoms as their body is healing or repairing. But it's also the possibility that if they've got 30, 40 years of a horrible lifestyle, you know, that snowball is still running down the hill there. It can take months, sometimes years, to stop that snowball and turn it around, you know, before, you know, those symptoms are likely to change there too. So,
absolutely. It's part of the healing process. I don't see healing processes go like this or that. I see them go like sine waves, right? Ups and downs, ups and downs, ups and downs. I mean, yes, it could certainly be that. What else? What else could it be? Part of the healing process. What else?
Just something they're not aware of that they're doing that is detrimental.
Say it again.
Something that they're not aware is detrimental, whether it be just sitting too much or something lifestyle-wise that they think's okay, but it's actually not.
Absolutely. It absolutely could be something like that. What else could it be?
Well, it could be, you know, we're talking about subluxation, a pattern there, something that I'm not identifying or addressing as a practitioner that I'm missing. As well, that could be kind of part of it.
Yeah. See, it can be retracing or reactivation. It could be that I, as a practitioner, are missing something. It could be I, as a practitioner, hurt them. Is it possible that I did an adjustment and it hurt me? Yeah. There's all kinds of possibilities. The last one, which is probably the most important one, is what?
Don't know. Tell me.
Exactly. You don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a possibility. So if I take a look at, did you do anything that might have brought it on? And then I look at retracing or reactivation. And for me, it's pretty clear if that's coming on because the time before they had a major shift. Usually I said, hey, this is what I see coming on. You ought to read this pamphlet because I think you're going to, you know, feel like you got hit by a truck. You know, it could be just part of the healing process. Right? It could be that I did something or I didn't do something. But then there's this whole other world of, I don't know. I just don't know. And it's one of the most freeing things as a doctor to be able to say. I don't know. When I was younger, I thought I had to know everything. And Donnie Epstein was in my office. He was staying at my house and he was in my office. And at the end of the day, that's the one thing he said to me is, I want you to practice this. I go, what is it? He goes, I don't know. Why don't you say it like 100 times? Tomorrow in practice, I'm going to say it a bunch, right? He goes, you know, you got that thing, like you got to know everything, you don't. And it was just so freeing. And the truth is, I don't know, lay down, let's adjust you. Let's monitor you closely. Keep an eye and see if anything seems to be bringing it on. And we'll figure out what's going on. That's it.
Yeah, pal.
As you're getting healthier, so one is I'm feeling worse. Why do you think that is? And the other is I'm feeling better. Why do you think that is? You know, Mercury's in retrograde. You know, Pluto's in Uranus. Like, I've got to get them to go, well, you've been adjusting me. Energy is flowing. I'm eating better, exercising, and dealing with stress. No wonder I feel better. I'm healing myself. If they can't say that out loud by, like, the third adjustment, you're screwing up from my perspective. I'm asking, why do you think that is until I get that they get it? Until I even look like I'm saying, why do you think that is? And they go, oh, no, I get it. They'll laugh. They'll crack up. I get it. You know, energy's flowing. I'm healing myself. Yeah, I'm feeling better. Feeling worse. Doc, people should be walking in saying to you, you're going to know, you're going to feel, you knew, you're going to know I was out partying last night, you know, because you lay your hand on me, man, what happened? What happened to you? God, you just feel all gushy in here and all swollen. If we're not hearing that kind of stuff, then we're not doing, from my perspective, what we need to be doing as doctors, as chiropractors, keeping the thread of the story of the disapparentation, disapparentation, subluxation going on. And then the last part of that, it's all about what's next for them. if you were healthier, how would we know it? What would you experience? You know, most people don't ask this question. I asked it all the time when people were asymptomatic. Asymptomatic reevaluation, right? You get zero aches and pains. Next 12 visits, what are we trying to accomplish? How will we know we got there? Really important questions to ask. You'll be amazed. You know, I'll quit flying off the handle and punching my kid. You know, I'll quit fighting with my wife. You know, I'll finally get out and open that business. You'd be amazed at what happens. It's all about their life. You're not talking about pain anymore. That's already gone. But what would a full expression of life force, what would that look like in their life? That's the questions we have to ask so that they want to stay for a lifetime.
Yeah. Great questions, I think, that at times that we get scared about. Russ, I feel like we could probably talk for days and weeks, so we probably need to organise a schedule around two of this as well. So, you know, to kind of wind some of this up, and then I want to direct people towards where they can get some more information about all these kind of things there too, is that, you know, what we're talking about today is the importance of certainty, and that really takes some time for you to sit down and evaluate. What do you do? What are you looking after? How do you know? How do you measure before and after? And then rolling into this concept of how do we go about communicating it in a way that we're not shutting it down, where we can get people to listen and to learn, and that whole concept of asking questions and stuff like that too. Russ, you've got a couple of resources or some resources that you can direct people towards where they can continue some learning for this as well. Where would our audience go to find more about that?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different things. The first one is, we were just talking before. I'll have time to build out a...
Yeah, it'll be there by the time that this is released. So let us know where to go and it'll be there.
So if you go to the, thee8stepsbook.com, click on that, put in your name and email, I'll send you this book, which goes into great detail about every aspect of practice, which I can't recommend enough. And then you'll get a series of emails with some videos where I'll be teaching you some of the things we talked about earlier. Really good stuff. If you are interested, we've got my module on the importance of certainty 1, the importance of certainty 2, and my 45-minute discussion of the deep discussion of what is a subluxation. If you get those separately, they're $6.97. And if you want to get them here, you can get them for $1.99. And just go to the, actually, let's not do that. Let's go to the OHC system, theohcsystem.com /TNA. For Tony and Angus.
Those things are up on the screen and I'll make sure I have them down beneath you. So if you're listening to this in the car, then head back over to Adio Media if you're on the podcast. In the show notes, we'll have the link for those too. So
fans of TNA on the Marketing Your Practice podcast, that's for sure, Russ. So I appreciate that link.
The 8-step book, and then it's the OHCsystem.com/TNA there. I've been through... all of Russ's content, his modules on certainty are fabulous, regardless of what profession that you're in. And I'm hoping that, you know, we've spoken lots about chiropractic today, but that idea of knowing what you do, how do you measure it before and after, how does it impact people's lives? You know, whether you're a dentist, you know, a medical practitioner, a naturopath, a myotherapist, I hope you can see how to apply that too, and then also to kind of look at that in terms of, you know, the different platforms that you're communicating on as well. So, as always, Russ.
Yeah, I'll just say, like, I've coached one osteopath, one medical doctor, a couple of acupuncturists, three or four naturopaths, a kahuna, and a skydive owner. You can't imagine how it really is all the same stuff. It really is. If you're at all interested, you know, go to my website, look at the stuff, the communications modules, all that. If you're interested, if you're serious about growing your practice, give me a call. Let's talk. Let's see where you're at, where you want to get to. I probably every quarter I get one or two spaces that open up for me to do coaching. Not sure when you'll be listening to this, but if I am, otherwise my associate, but you'd be amazed at what would happen when you do one-on-one coaching, and what will help you really customize this kind of material and integrate it into your world, however that is. And then you have that power behind your punch. It's unbelievable what happens when you get that level of clarity. So I want to thank you guys as always for having me. Love you guys and all of you who are listening. Thanks so much.
Well, buddy, we love you too. You know,
thanks, buddy.
Metaphor of the power behind the punch, or you talked about before, you know, so often, you know, we want to share a marketing message out to our community and fill a bucket that's got holes for it. You know, the thriving practice, certainly the one that Tony and I talk about and the people that we coach, is all about filling a bucket that has no holes in it. That's when we start to get into, you know, really where we want to be there too. And so, Russ, we want to acknowledge you for just being a bright light out there for sharing new novel ideas and ideas that really make a practice very different and thriving as well. So until next time, until round two, when we can get back on this too, buddy. So have a great afternoon.
Thanks, mate. I just realised that I think I've solved the issue of why I've got anal fissures, and that's because Pluto was in my anus. So I want to thank you for that one as well. So Russ, until next time, buddy. Love you lots.
Bye, guys.
See you soon, mate. Bye.
You just do the dog work up. I wanted to fornicate, Russ. Every time you ask me, I want to fornicate.
Did you? I actually sure.